This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, May 6th, 2003. A fever pitch of fear. Endless photographs of Asian people wearing protective masks. That's what Los Angeles Times writers Sean Hubler, David Pearson, and John Goldman spoke about May 4th, about SARS and what was going on around the country. There were, in newspaper accounts, over and over again, reminiscence of the 1918 influenza epidemic, where 20 million people throughout the world were killed. And quarantines were going on in Singapore. Anyone who had a fever shown up on a thermographic machine coming into the airport was quarantined for 10 days. CBSNews.com, reporting from Malaysia April 26th, said SARS threat unprecedented, and quoted Shigeru Omi, who's the regional director of the World Health Organization. The threat posed by SARS is unprecedented, Omi said. The virus has already demonstrated its explosive power to cause sudden outbreaks in a large number of countries. SARS and bioweapons, the underlying politics, is taking aim for today. Ralph?
The theme of the enormous global consequences of SARS has been orchestrated in almost every major medium of communication. As you indicate, Maya, the Sydney Morning Herald ran a piece on April 25th called SARS could be worse than AIDS. 1 billion people in 60 weeks. Dr. Patrick Dixon, an AIDS and global trends specialist at the London Business School, warned. 1 billion cases of SARS within 60 weeks. And they compare it, as you indicate, to the flu pandemic of 1918 and 1919 that they state killed 30 million people. Dr. Dixon stated that SARS would kill tens of millions of people and stated that we, quote, are in an urgent race to prevent a global SARS catastrophe with cases doubling every 2 weeks and a 25% chance that we are already too late to stop an uncontrolled explosive spread that will lead to tens of millions of deaths. This was a story that Dr. Dixon gave to the Daily Express in London, and it has been spread like SARS is supposed to spread. This story is spreading across the world. Not only that, but according to the statements of Dr. Dixon, orchestrated AIDS has now infected 80 million people, and SARS, quote, will more easily spread and be even more devastating. That is the theme, that is the thesis, that is the contention. And it is based, Maya, upon a couple of hundred of people actually affected by the SARS pandemic. And we have to look at that incredible disparity to understand what is going on here.
Yes, Ralph. In 27 countries, as of May 4th, there were 6,234 cases of severe respiratory ailments, some of which were diagnosed with as a coronavirus, which they suspect to be SARS. That's what they're defining it as. And there had been 435 deaths worldwide, primarily healthcare workers and aged people with heart or respiratory ailments. Now, it's not clear that all of them were caused by the coronavirus. For instance, in some of the countries, the deaths, the healthcare workers themselves and the coroners there are saying that the deaths were not caused by SARS. And in fact, some of the deaths have been attributed to the treatment that was given to the frail elderly, which was a combination of a very potent antiviral medication called ribavirin and immunosuppressants, the corticosteroids, which made the people unable to fight off the flu, the coronavirus flu. Ralph. I wanted to mention also, people may have heard, this was first brought to our attention by one of the WBAI producers, that at the University of California at Berkeley, they have taken the SARS fear to the extreme by forbidding summer students who are coming from Asia, from China, Taiwan, Singapore, and Hong Kong. They're not allowing them to enroll in school this summer, which begins May 27th. And this is getting national attention because the students are forbidden to even enter the University of California at Berkeley.
Asian students are predominant at the University of California, reflecting the extraordinary achievements that Asian students have consistently demonstrated, and now in the present situation of a huge percentage of Asian students at the University of California, this bureaucracy has actually told the present students that they should consider that if they go back to visit their families, that they would not be readmitted or permitted to re-enter and take up their position at the university. We have here a virtual reign of terror, a climate of terror, a climate of fear that is being orchestrated and whipped up around the specific question of SARS. And indeed, in this regard, I think it's appropriate to cite Dr. Leonard Horowitz, who has done seminal work in such books as Emerging Viruses, AIDS, and Ebola, Accident or Intentional. His other book, Death in the Air, Globalism, Terrorism, and Toxic Warfare. Dr. Horowitz, along with others who we will discuss, has been an important figure in demonstrating the laboratory and government laboratory origins of AIDS. But in regards to SARS, Dr. Horowitz makes the following statement. Rather than a public health emergency, the severe acute respiratory syndrome called SARS would be best diagnosed as a sickening and repulsive scam. This article argues that this unprecedented viral attack is an ingenious social experiment featuring institutionalized bioterrorism for widespread psychosocial control. And the outspread of this experiment, whether it leads to population reduction or not, depends on you. Dr. Horowitz goes on to contend that the severe acute respiratory syndrome known as SARS is in fact a trial run, and that the few hundred people who have been actually affected do not allow in any sense the imputation to this disease as a pandemic, but indeed it is preparing the public for a real pandemic on the order of 40 to 80 million people already affected by AIDS.
Mark Siegel, who's on the Faculty of Internal Medicine at New York University and has been testifying before the Senate Finance Committee on the handling of bioterrorism crisis, said that SARS, the World Health Organization, and the Centers for Disease Control are trying to control the populace through fear. Those are his exact words. Toronto had been cut off by the World Health Organization travel advisory until April 30th. Chinatowns are deserted, and people around the world are stigmatizing anyone who comes from an Asian country, as you saw from the reaction of the chancellor of the University of California at Berkeley. And what Dr. Siegel points out is that there is no evidence that quarantining entire countries does much to prevent the spread of disease as targeting people who actually have it, such as done with people who have tuberculosis when they are put in isolation wards in hospitals.
Yes, he goes on to say that quarantining hospitals where SARS has spread to healthcare workers or designating certain centers as SARS hospitals is the upper limits of what seems rational or reasonable. And he goes on to state that the basic underlying issue here is the following. People are being approached where they feel the most vulnerable and where they know the least. It is easy to sign them up for a program purported to be in their interest. And this is what the government has been doing. Deliberately and consciously, with bioterror, whipping up public acquiescence in anti-terror programs rendering people terrified and afraid, making people feel they need the government to protect them, and allowing free reign with a government agenda. Dr. Mark Siegel in The Nation, and Dr. Siegel's concerns are more than warranted when you look at the treatment that this is receiving and when we examine exactly what is involved with SARS in relation to the sustained bioterror, the sustained bioweaponry that this government in the United States has been maintaining for a period of 60 years. May 2nd, The New York Times. Nicholas D. Kristof, one of the imperial liberals like the Hannibal Lecter of American journalism, Thomas Friedman, Nicholas Kristof in this piece has the headline, Lock 'em Up. Right after returning from covering the war in the Congo 5 years ago, around the time of an Ebola outbreak, and we'll return to Ebola, I broke into a high fever one night. 10 minutes later, I heard sirens approaching my apartment. There was a pounding at the door, and a team of men looking like space invaders in bioprotection suits came to take the Ebola patient away. In my case, it was malaria. But a lesson of the SARS outbreak is that we in the United States need to compromise on our civil liberties in order to confront health risks. And this our detailed column by Kristof goes on to say the following. New York must forcibly quarantine people in the event that they are suspected of being victims of SARS. I encountered a dictatorial approach to public health in rural China, which combated leprosy much more effectively than democratic countries. The American Civil Liberties Union argues that the model U.S. health laws, quote, will have serious consequence for individual freedom, privacy, and equality, unquote. That's right. That's right. But he says we have to forget about civil liberties. If you disagree, how about if I visit your neighborhood the next time I'm back from an Ebola outbreak in Congo and feeling feverish? Lock 'em up, says Nicholas Kristof. Lock 'em up.
Lock 'em up. And what Nicholas Kristof and others across the country are using the SARS is as an opportunity to force the states to pass the Model Emergency Health Powers Act, an act of which we have spoken often on Taking Aim. Kristof points out that to date, 22 states of the 50 states in the United States have passed the kind of law, but California, New York, and Texas so far have not. And California, New York are very large states, and Texas as well, the largest states in the United States. And what the Model Emergency Health Powers Act does is to put in the hands of the governor alone, for the most part, without the stopgap of the legislatures in the state, gives the governor the opportunity to seize hospitals, force inoculation, and quarantine people, as well as to set up perimeters around the state so that people cannot go in and out. Model Emergency Health Powers Act. And in that line, on April 4th, President Bush, in an executive order, 13295, revised the list of quarantinable communicable diseases to add severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, which he says associated with fever and signs and symptoms of pneumonia or other respiratory illness. How many people have fevers of over 100.4? How many people end up with coughs and other respiratory illness? And what President Bush has done is given health officials and publicly elected officials the opportunity to quarantine people as long as they have these symptoms.
Kristof addresses this with a very particular political focus. Quote, after 9/11, the Bush administration wisely pushed through Model Emergency Health Powers Act as a template for legislation by states across the country. The legislation permits governors, to declare a state of emergency, impose quarantines, order vaccinations, the destruction of dangerous property, limit people's movements, ration medicines, seize anything from dead bodies to private hospitals, detain people on a mass scale. And the 22 states that have passed this kind of law have to be used as the basis for extending it to the remaining states, and California, New York, and Texas in particular have to be brought into line. Lock them up and scare them to death.
In line with this, even the scientific magazines, the internationally renowned scientific magazines, Nature and The New Scientist, fell into lockstep with this fear epidemic. As was written by Dr. Mei Wan Ho, a noted geneticist who was in London, who was part of the Institute for Science and Society, and which publishes Science and Society, the magazine. She writes, "A palpable sense of panic has gripped the health authorities around the world." Quote, "Mother Nature is the ultimate terrorist," says an editorial in the journal Nature. "Powerless to stop the spread," says New Scientist magazine. Meanwhile, here in the United States, next weekend, Mother's Day, according to the Wall Street Journal and newspapers across the country, Chicago, Seattle plan drills to test terror preparedness. This is Top Off 2, prepared by the Department of Homeland Security, a national bioterror drill that involves children and seniors. And, for instance, in Chicago, the Chicago Healthcare Council, with a group of more than 140 area hospitals, according to the Wall Street Journal on May 2nd, reports more than 1,200 volunteers from high schools and senior centers have signed up to act as victims. Notice that they're only using children and the elderly, and that they're going to have them pour into emergency rooms, and another 2,600 paper victims will be faxed into the hospitals for virtual treatment. Every Illinois hospital is expected to participate. They don't mean expected to participate. It's being mandated to participate either in the physical drill or the tabletop exercise. This is in Chicago. The same thing is happening in San Francisco and in Seattle. Ralph?
What's important in my view, Maya, about the article by Dr. Mei Wan Ho, SARS and the Bioweapon Menace, is that she analyzes very carefully what is really going on with this SARS disease. And she indicates that it is very doubtful whether the coronavirus is the complete story. One of the indications here is that the coronavirus, which is immediately identified as the cause of SARS, has shown up in only 30 patients tested, and at least 40% of the patients show no indication of the coronavirus whatsoever. What we have here, indeed, is the indication of a combined operation that suggests deliberate laboratory infection, and she goes there. She discusses genetic engineering of superviruses. A report has appeared, she writes, in the Journal of Virology, describing the methods for introducing desired mutations into the coronavirus to create new viruses. A key feature of the procedure is to make interspecific chimera recombinant viruses involving replacing of the spike protein gene in infectious peritonitis virus, which causes invariably fatal infection in cats, and the recombinant will no longer infect only cat cells, but will multiply rapidly and be extended to other species. She goes into the particulars about how geneticists have now greatly speeded up the evolution in the laboratory to create viruses and bacteria that have never existed in billions of years of evolution in life. And she keys this to the fact that for 40 and 50 years, government laboratories have specialized in the particular task of genetic engineering experiments inherently dangerous in order to prepare for bioweapons programs to be deployed on random populations at government discretion. The SARS epidemic and the SARS episode remind us of some simple facts about genetic engineering. It is the rampant, deliberate, laboratory recombination of genetic material from diverse sources that would otherwise have almost no opportunity to mix and recombine in nature. And that is a feature not only of SARS, but of AIDS and of Ebola and other virus-bearing diseases. Disease-causing viruses and bacteria and their genetic material are the predominant tools of this government genetic engineering, she writes, and the intentional creation of bioweapons, I'm still quoting. These artificial constructs are generated by genetic engineering. They cross species barriers. They jump into genomes. They further enhance and they speed up horizontal gene transfer and recombination. It is a major route to the generation of new disease agents that are now permeating the planet. She writes, these genetic engineered constructs and organisms routinely released in the environment hardly need the help of terrorists. They only need the government laboratories. They only need the bioweapon program to accomplish their ends. It is the song of the future that SARS is but a rehearsal. SARS is but an indication of a longstanding and permeating program.
As Dr. Mae-Won Ho states in this article, April 17th of 2003, which is available on the Internet at both the Institute for Science and Society and also, incidentally, the Tompkins County Green Party distributed. Tompkins County is in the Finger Lakes of New York State, near New York City. Now, what Mae-Won Ho says explicitly, new epidemics of viral and bacteria diseases will be occurring with increasing regularity. Mother Nature is not the ultimate terrorist. We are. Now, in line with this, to go back to the drills that the United States government is carrying off throughout the country this coming weekend, Mother's Day weekend of all weekends, the Top Off 2 is the sequel to Top Off 1, in which a simulated aerosol plague attack in a Denver concert hall was estimated to have 4,000 sick and 2,000 dead in 4 days. So you see, the government is not only terrorizing us all, but they are creating the scenarios for what they can possibly do with the bioweapons that they have been manufacturing for tens and tens of years. In Top Off 2, for instance, the mist of plague bacteria will be released at 5 Chicago sites, including O'Hare and Midway airports. Pneumonic plague, which results when the germ causing bubonic plague is inhaled, is highly contagious. After inhaling the germs over the weekend, the pretend victims will develop fever and chills, head and body aches in one to three days. Breathing becomes labored. Death ensues quickly if an antibiotic treatment, preferably streptomycin, isn't begun within 18 to 24 hours of exposure. So here we have in Chicago and in Seattle the government actually setting into motion what could happen with plague, the distribution of the plague virus throughout the United States. And Ralph?
Maya, the article that you describe is also reported by the Associated Press writer Matthew Daly. Huge Homeland Security drills planned, and it describes the events in Chicago, but also in Seattle. And it the article details that they are preparing the public in Seattle, Chicago, and Washington areas for the most extensive type of drill in the United States history, involving 8,500 people from 100 federal, state, and local agencies. The American Cross, the Red Cross, and the Canadian government. Our objective is to examine the use in the United States of weapons of mass destruction, Tom Ridge said, and he goes on to give particular details. Ted Macklin, the assistant director of the Office of Domestic Preparedness, has been planning these events for 3 years. They are to be implemented also in Denver, Colorado, and in New Hampshire. Hampshire. The participants will range from governors, mayors, county executives, elected officials from all realms of authority, police officers, firefighters, hospital personnel, and other emergency responders. The hundreds of evaluators will watch the exercise and report their findings. They are preparing the public for the mass quarantining, seizure of hospitals, and detaining of large numbers of people. SARS is timed well for this well-prepared operation of state terror directed against the public in the United States.
Now, Ralph, it's very interesting that the weapon of choice for a top two is the plague, is pneumonic plague. I came across an article by Neil McKay, who's the home affairs editor of the Sunday Herald in Glasgow, Scotland, and it's dated March 9th, 2003, and I suggest everyone look at it, revealed how naval intelligence tested lethal plague bombs off Scotland. And he states, it was early in the morning on June 21st, 1952, when the sound of two percussive whumps coming from a small stretch of sea some 20 miles north of the Isle of Lewis off the coast of Scotland heralded the dawn of a new age in British weaponry. The explosions came from two small 4-pound bombs packed with plague, and they had just been detonated in the open air at sea. Britain had developed the biological weapon of mass destruction, and he says it's the most terrifying one ever created. It's the weaponized form of Black Death, the bubonic plague. Now, the Sunday Herald came across 40 pages of documents that were written by British naval intelligence officers and scientists from Porton Down. That's Great Britain's secret weapons development laboratory, which has tested anthrax, plague, and other weapons of mass destruction. And it's an astonishing detail about this history of the plague bombs off the coast of Scotland. Now, this was all done with not only the full knowledge of British naval intelligence, it included the full knowledge and approval of then Prime Minister Winston Churchill. The documents are marked top secret, which, according to the Sunday Herald and intelligence officers, means this is really top secret, or, as they say, top, top secret.
Leonard Cohen, in his book Clouds of Secrecy, which we have often cited in Taking Aim, amplifies the use of plague as a weapon. The 40 years of the Army, the Pentagon's germ warfare operations over populated areas in the United States, 239 sites around the country, which affected over 10 million people. Again, this book, Clouds of Secrecy, by Leonard A. Cole, with an introduction by former Senator Alan Cranston of California, delineates how the United States government has through its Pentagon operations in the subway systems of New York and the school systems of St. Louis and of Minneapolis, and particularly in the Bay Area of the United States, trillions of bacilli and spores released that were responsible for a tenfold increase in spinal and brain meningitis in the Bay Area. Now, this work by Leonard Cole has a particular significance because on page 124, he describes the genetic engineering operations of the military, and he writes as follows. The United States Army had already incorporated recombinant DNA research into its program. The recombinant DNA methods of the human nervous system gene of acetylcholinesterase from human neuroblastoma cells into bacteria, which were deployed as weapons and tested in cities across the United States. The Army received permission from the National Institute of Health Advisory Committee on Recombinant DNA to engage in toxic research for weapons. It cloned specific toxins by genetic engineering technology to introduce the gene for pneumococcus toxin into E. coli. I repeat this. The gene for pneumococcus toxin into E. coli. We're talking here about the pneumonia-like symptoms of SARS, and their relation to E. coli, a feature of the SARS epidemic as it's now being described. And Coles writes on page 125, this Army program of recombinant DNA for military purposes had begun 3 years before through the Pentagon. Howard Zuklinski, a biomedical researcher and science writer, visiting the Army's facility for infectious diseases at Fort Detrick in 1982, described the program of recombinant DNA research for weapons, in specifically the pneumococcus toxin, as the an Army weaponized program which would be released and tested on the public. Clouds of secrecy.
You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Shunman
and Maya Schoen. Our program today, SARS and Bioweapons, the Underlying Politics. I want to take this moment to let you know that we will not be on next Tuesday and will return on Tuesday, May 20th, for a two-hour special that begins at 4 p.m. rather than our normal 5 p.m. Remember, May 20th, a two-hour special for the WBAI Fund Drive. Our special will be World War IV. Yes, World War IV, as has been spoken about in the press by former CIA Director James Woolsey. You are listening to Taking Aim on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York and listener-sponsored radio and on the internet at www.wbai.org. You can reach us at our voicemail 212-209-2953. Our email is takingaim@pacbell.net. That's takingaim@pacbell.net. If you missed part of today's show, it'll be archived at our internet site, www.wbaifree.org/takingaim. Now, Ralph, the experiments that you were talking about, again, also in Great Britain, not only were they developing bubonic plague to give the pneumonic plague, the Black Death, they were also experimenting with brucellosis and the tularemia viruses. Now, this is incredible that all this was taking place, and it not only took place in 1952, they also then, at the behest of Winston Churchill, went to the Bahamas, and the British scientists and intelligence officers settled on a tiny area of the Bahamas, which they described as, quote, the best place we could find on the surface of the globe. And the Caribbean experiment was called Operation Ozone and began in 1954. At the same time, they acknowledge in the Sunday Herald that the United States, just as you were pointing out, Leonard Cole has documented to such an extent, was also carrying out these germ warfare trials and developing very potent germ warfare. And they don't just develop these for the sake of it. They develop these for using them.
Well, let's look at that in very particular terms, Maya, because I'm going to make one more reference here to this very important book by Leonard A. Cole. And Leonard A. Cole had a prior association with Fort Detrick. He now teaches public health policy at Rutgers University. But his extraordinarily important book, which is so replete with official documentation, is addressing, as I mentioned on pages 124 and 125, the specific program in the 1980s that is related now to what we're describing as SARS. And in this chapter, which is called Engineering Genes for Defense used here somewhat euphemistically and ironically, he quotes Sheldon Krimsky, the social scientist at Tufts University at the Times, when he was examining this recombinant DNA research with respect to biological weapons tested on the American public and city across city in the United States. Quote, what assurances are there that this rDNA technology is not being used by the Department of Defense to produce new biological weapons? There is no distinction between offensive and defensive biological weapons. It doesn't even make sense to speak about these as defensive weapons, as virtually everyone who is knowledgeable about biological warfare recognizes this is preparation for weaponry that will be used. This is preparation for weaponry that will be used. And indeed, in the article by Dr. Robert E. Lee, who has made an important contribution, which we will discuss at a later point, hopefully in this program yet, about AIDS as a government laboratory-induced retrovirus, Dr. Lee writes the following. With respect to the claim that there is a coronavirus involved in SARS, he addresses the question of what he calls neuraminidase. There is no known neuraminidase in any known coronavirus. Neuraminidase is found in engineered influenza viruses. SARS is an influenza orthomorovirus coronavirus hybrid. The neuraminidase cleaves sialic acid inside cells and mediates viral attachment to the respiratory epithelium of the host and the consequent infection of susceptible cells. This neuraminidase is not like any other known neuraminidase. The neuraminidase made its first known appearance in any coronavirus in this SARS infection. He writes, it is a very weird coronavirus. It is a combinant coronavirus. If SARS coronavirus would be naturally occurring, then there would be discovery of other orthomyovirus coronavirus hybrid-like viruses. But what we find here, that this is not a true coronavirus. It is not a true orthomyovirus. It is an entirely new species of virus altogether. It is a combinant. It has all the features of a government engineered program, and it is consistent with what Dr. Cole is describing as the program that was in fact in place in the 1980s as a weaponized device. We now see its manifestation.
And in fact, Ralph, Dr. Mae-Won Ho and Professor Joe Cummins, in an article, SARS and Genetic Engineering, say that now that the Genomic Sciences Center in Vancouver, Canada, has sequenced the entire coronavirus and posted it online on April 12th, they say that the possibility that genetic engineering contributed to creating the SARS virus is definitely raised, and they point out that this is something that is not being investigated. And of course, as we have been saying over and again, of course they're not investigating it because it is intentional. Now, something interesting also happened just before 9/11. On September 4th, 2001, the New York Times published an article that didn't draw much attention because of September 11th, 2001, and the World Trade Center attacks, and was by Judith Miller, Stephen Engelberg, and William Broad. U.S. Germ Warfare Research Pushes Treaty Limits. Now, they don't really draw the political conclusions, but the Federation of American Scientists, on its website, on its sections on bioweapons, talks about the real significance of this New York Times article, part of which is that the New York Times had obtained the information about U.S. secret bioweapons programs earlier in May 2001, and they didn't come forward with it. And what they did find out is that the United States, with the CIA and also Defense Intelligence, was responsible for engineering an anthrax strain. That's right. The anthrax scare, which later on came forward, the weaponized anthrax, which the Bush administration and other government officials were trying to blame on Iraq and on Al-Qaeda, and eventually through the genetic sequencing that was done throughout the world by scientists, it had to come back to the weaponized strain that could only be produced in U.S. weapons laboratories. But as early as May, the New York Times had information that the Edgewood Chemical and Biological Center in Maryland, which was a Department of Defense site, was doing testing, that there was a Nevada test site, that Sandia National Laboratories was also doing testing, and at Battelle, that all this work was going on with the CIA creating little aerosol bombs and also anthrax testing that was going on, and it was going on against defense treaties, international treaties. Ralph?
A higher form of killing. The Secret History of Chemical and Biological Warfare by Robert Harris and Jeremy Paxman, published by Random House. Washington Post called it the best account of gas and germ warfare available. The Chicago Sun-Times describes this book as an unsettling history, an exhaustive exploration of the little-known apocalyptic aspect of official warfare, carrying the punch of an Armageddon. It reminds us that this world will end not with a nuclear bomb, but with whimpers of fevered agony. The Financial Times says compelling. The authors make a clear case for why the government has developed these weapon programs in even more secrecy than its nuclear work. And in this very carefully documented book, it describes research that began with groups of biologists, government-operated biologists, making their contribution to a war by producing a host of diseases capable of spreading sickness throughout the world. And in addition to infections that would destroy wheat, rice, anthrax, yellow fever, tularemia, brucellosis, Q fever, Venezuelan equine encephalomyelitis. These have now been standardized as weapons for the United States. At Pine Bluff Arsenal in Arkansas, in the chapter called "The Search for the Patriotic Germ," the machinery for 20 years has now advanced to a mass-producing disease-weaponized mechanism that has deployed these germs as weapons to be released at Pentagon discretion. This is a program that has been at the heart of the ruling class's campaigns for domination, the center of the weapon arsenal that the United States military has tested on the American public, as Clouds of Secrecy makes clear. We had in 9/11... an exercise in state terror, in terrorizing the American people in a numbed acquiescence for a program of preemptive war to seize oil and to fragment countries in each their turn. And then we have, in the targeting of Iraq, a weapon of mass distraction to deflect attention away from the hand of government in the events of 9/11 itself. And now we have, with the outcome of this devastating war in Iraq and some of the consequences, a weapon of mass delusion in SARS, which is deflecting our attention away from what is happening on the ground in Iraq and the preparations for the next stage of World War IV. Weapons of mass destruction, weapons of mass distraction, weapons of mass delusion, terrorizing the American people, terrorizing the people of the world with a higher form of killing, lethal legacy by a weapons for sale. The United States declined South African scientists' offer on man-made pathogens, a two-part series in the Washington Post, which documents the following. Don Goosen's calling card to the Federal Bureau of Investigation was vials of bacteria that he had freeze-dried and hidden inside a toothpaste tube for secret passage to the United States. Amongst hundreds of flasks in the Pretoria labs, the South African scientists picked man-made strains that would impress a microbial Frankenstein, fusing the genes of a common intestinal bug with DNA from the pathogen that will cause the deadly illness gas gangrene to be released and to be deployed as a weapon. On May 6, 2002, Goosen slipped his parcels in the hands of a CIA officer who couriered the microbes 8,000 miles for a drop-off with the Federal Bureau of Investigation. If U.S. officials liked what they saw, Goosen stated he was prepared to offer the entire collection of pathogens developed in a secret South African bioweapons research program Goosen once headed. His extraordinary offer, the article continues, to the FBI is outlined in documents obtained by the Washington Post, in interviews with key participants, promising scores of additional vials containing bacteria that cause anthrax, plague, salmonella, botulism, and a host of related diseases to be deployed as weapons, a technique used by weapons scientists to make these diseases harder to detect and impossible to defeat, to be delivered to the United States government to strengthen U.S. defenses and to prepare for the American military incorporation of these programs. It should be pointed out that these weapon programs in South Africa were funded by the Central Intelligence Agency in their origin. They were ostensibly terminated, but indeed, Jeffrey M. Bale of the Center for Nonproliferation Studies at the Monterey Institute of International Studies, carrying out a study of these weapons programs in South Africa, states the following. Goosen and others are providing the samples and are being approached by the U.S. government for programs that were never dismantled. Project Coast, a top-secret biological chemical program created by South Africa's white minority government, which came to light in the 1990s. Huge stockpiles of missiles and bombs for biological warfare, specializing in the tools of terrorism and assassination, and indeed including the stealth weapon that would kill and incapacitate without a trace. The program's military commanders have researched these drugs clandestinely, applied them through black neighborhoods throughout South Africa, and produced biological weapons that selectively target the country's black majority population.
Routes. In particular, they were considering injecting Nelson Mandela while he was in prison with something that would cause cancer, and using these techniques to assassinate Joe Slovo. What is also brought up with the attempts for providing genetically engineered weapons, bioweapons, that would target, for instance, in South Africa, the black population, the black majority population. It was revealed by Uzi Manemi and Marie Colvin in an article that was reprinted by a Middle East Report of November 1998. Israel planning ethnic bomb as Saddam Caves, it's called. And it says, Israel's working on a biological weapon that would harm Arabs but not Jews, according to Israeli military and Western intelligence sources. Now, in the Israeli scientists called it an ethnobomb, and they were identifying distinctive genes carried by some Arabs that, and then would create a genetically modified bacterium or virus. Now, this was substantiated, and it was even mentioned in the Knesset, the Israeli parliament, by Didi Zucker, who decried the development that was going on in Israel. And James, the world-renowned defense magazine in Great Britain, called it the ethnobomb, and it reported on the Israeli development also.
This was picked up by Agence France Presse, Maya, ethnic cleansing weapons, and it describes the genetic weapons, cites the report, biotechnology, weapons, and humanity, by the British Medical Association, which represents all of Britain's doctors, that had predicted the existence of this ethno-specific weapon, and cited the danger of what Israel was preparing, and warned that nothing can stop the development of viral vectors of microorganisms capable of targeting the specific enemy groups with a particular genetic makeup, while sparing their neighbors. And what's significant about the ethnic-specific weapon of the Israelis is that the Israelis were deeply and fully involved in not just Project Coast, but the entire bioweapon and nuclear preparations of the South African regime. So we have not just the coalescence here of the ethnic cleansing weapons of the Israeli the Zionist state, but it's in conjunction with the South African program. And now when we look at the two-part article in particular about what are called these novel weapons, the FBI and CIA were jointly involved. And Goosen's operations involved the scientific program that had official state support from the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Central Intelligence Agency, targeting black communities across South Africa with implications of a global character. The Pentagon was sufficiently interested to arrange meetings between Goosen and Bioport Corporation, I quote. And this has to do with the U.S. anthrax program, weaponized anthrax. Goosen, in discussions with the United States Department of Defense, offers of open cooperation in sharing Project Coast's extensive research into anthrax, and the Pentagon arranging meetings between Goosen and the Bioport Corporation. We've long discussed Bioport's relation to the Carlyle Group, to Admiral Crow, who was Clinton's ambassador to Great Britain and deeply involved in the Port and Downs program. It goes to the genesis of 9/11, which is a subject to which we shall be returning. The two men who were involved in bringing Goosen together with Bioport, and this again is the two-part article in the Washington Post, brought Goosen to the FBI with the programs of germ warfare, old hands in the shadowy world of arms trafficking and secret deals. One of the men involved was retired South African Major General Tai Minar, the military intelligence officer who worked undercover for the CIA in Cuba in the 1970s. The article continues.
Well, Ralph, the person in charge was, for the military, Wouter Basson, and it is Wouter Basson who created the novel weapons, they say, for anthrax and also the biogenetic engineering to develop the ethno bombs, for instance, in South Africa. We have only a few minutes left, and I really want to introduce something that we've been discussing and that we will do an entire Taking AIM program on in the future, and that is the AIDS virus. 15,000 people a day are infected with AIDS worldwide. The number of children who've been orphaned by AIDS is equivalent to the number of children in the United States under the age of five. Massive numbers of orphans worldwide, 40 million people infected. Now, Alan Cantwell, a doctor, Alan Cantwell Jr., has written many articles, and one of them, Blaming Chimps, Blacks, and Gays for AIDS, notes, in the fall of 1986, the Soviets shocked the world by claiming that HIV was secretly developed at Fort Detrick, the U.S. Army's biological warfare. Now, in this article, he gives a very detailed case that has convinced me. He says, lost in the history of AIDS is evidence pointing to HIV as a virus whose origin traces back to animal cancer retrovirus experimentation in the pre-AIDS years of the 1960s and 1970s, and that AIDS was introduced into the gay community in the United States and the African population via vaccine experiments and programs in the late 1970s that have been totally ignored in terms in favor of other theories, such as jumping species.
Maya, the most famous figure in regard to that work is Dr. Gallo. And Dr. Gallo, Robert Gallo, is called the famous AIDS researcher, had advanced the thesis that it was the green monkey that had been eaten in Africa and had been the source of this spreading of this new unprecedented virus. In the Covert Action Bulletin in winter 1981, Richard Hack discovered that Gallo was the project officer of, quote, a massive virus inoculation program that began in 1962 and ran until 1976. In using more than 2,000 monkeys injected with everything from human cancer tissues to viruses and even sheep's blood in an effort to develop a transmissible cancer, the monkeys succumbed to an immunosuppression with the Mason Pfizer virus, known as the immunosuppressive retrovirus, the class of viruses that includes the AIDS virus. In testimony presented to the House of Representatives on July 1, 1969, the U.S. government, biowarfare experts, predicted that a genetically engineered, highly fatal supergerm was being developed capable of destroying the human immune system. Molecular engineering of these viruses became commonplace in the military in the 1970s. In many of the military laboratories, they were transferring and jumping animal cancer viruses between different species. On May 11, 1987, a story entitled Smallpox Vaccine Triggered AIDS appeared on the front page of the London Times. And the London Times provides a grid in which over 100 million Central African blacks were injected with a nominal vaccine program, and there is a one-to-one correlation between the clusters of AIDS that first emerged and the location of these vaccination programs. We are going to detail in a further program the work of Alan Cantrell, and in particular of Boyd Graves, who is, has a flow chart in 1971 of precisely this government-induced induction of AIDS, the work of Dr. Len Horowitz, the panoply of people who have documented the role of the United States government and its military laboratories in deliberately inducing AIDS, from SARS to anthrax, from plague and bubonic plague to Project Coast, to the ethno-specific weapons, to the pandemic of AIDS itself. The genocidal and murderous character of this ruling class is documented beyond any rational and reasonable dispute. The utilization of fear, the terrorizing of the people of the world, the symptoms of a sick economic and political system that is the enemy of humankind. And we shall continue to document this reality and to prepare for the resistance that is inexorable and essential if human beings are to survive and if animal and plant life, indeed itself, are to be permanent on this planet.
Ralph, I just want to clarify one thing, that the 40 million people, it's the HIV virus, and it hasn't, that they're not full-blown AIDS victims yet. In South Africa today, one in four adults carries the HIV. This is bioweaponry brought to the ultimate. You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. If you missed a portion of our show, contact us at 212-209-2953 for your comments and to get tapes or CDs of today's program. Our programs are archived at www.wbaifree.org/Taking Aim, and you can also contact us at our email takingaim@pacbell.net. Remember, we won't be with you next week, but we'll be back for a 2-hour special beginning at 4 p.m. on Tuesday, May 20th.